Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes is our guest. Thanks so much for being with us. You can call in your questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, or you can tweet a question at WBAA News on Twitter. Good afternoon, Mayor.
Emily, good to be with you today.
So, Mayor, I'm going to start us out here. You and I have talked before about economic development in Frankfort. As you know, WBAA actually surveyed Frankfort residents earlier this year about what additional amenities they'd like to see come to the city, including a bigger variety of restaurants. So, to that end, my first question is, have you been to the new Japanese Steakhouse in Frankfort, Yamato?
I think I've been there two times this week, Emily.
Okay, so that sounds like an endorsement of the restaurant.
Absolutely, and even more so, Samantha McBarnes, my wife, gives two thumbs up. It's wonderful, it really is, and I had the pleasure of meeting the general manager when I was there a couple days ago. It's a good environment, it's a clean environment. It's really hard to find good sushi, especially in smaller communities. Mm-hmm. So if you're out there and you're a sushi lover or you're a hibachi lover, I highly recommend Yamato Japanese Steakhouse. And it's just an additional place to eat in the community, really gives some diversity. And every time I go by there, Emily, the parking lot's full. So they're doing a good job, and the proof is there.
Do you think this might set an example for other future restaurant owners that maybe more sushi is coming to Frankfort, if this is as successful as it looks like it is?
Well, I think people are hungry for diversity, and it's great to have this. I think our other restaurant owners are doing a wonderful job. I don't want to take anything away from them, but I think there's a place for even more diversity when it comes to food options in Frankfort, and it's just really good to see this flash of success because it will signal other investors that if they come here, they bring something a little different, they bring a different environment, they can offer up and fill a void that we don't currently have. They do have a chance at being successful here, and we need some proven track record of just that if we want that diversity to come to Frankfort. So it's a big win for us, and we're all pretty excited about it.
Okay. So let's start out with a press release we got yesterday from the city of Frankfort. It says, in response to the growing number of community events, outreach projects, and group activities, City of Frankfort officials remind the community to apply for a special event permit when planning events. Permits are required for any public event that involves street closures, serves food, or hosts a large number of people. And just to clarify further for everyone what a special event is per that permit application, we're talking about, and I'm going to read off a long list here, so hang in there with me, a temporary event or gathering, including but not limited to a parade, procession, street dance, rally, social gathering, wedding and wedding reception, race, concert, festival or cultural event, exhibition or show, celebration, carnival, and circus. Those are all of the events. And then there's a list of what running those events might entail that would require the submission of this permit, like the street closures. So first of all, what specifically prompted you to send this specific reminder to everyone about making sure that they apply for a permit if they're having an event that requires one?
Well, this is something new for our community. Over the past 8 years, Emily, we've seen just really a fluster of various 501c3s and organizations wanting to host community events, whether it be a spaghetti run or an overdose awareness day or a festival for kids in a certain neighborhood, which is all great. We applaud all this, but in order for us to do our job properly, we need to be organized, and the city needs to have just a little heads up so we can coordinate amongst our various departments. What we found was happening, not in all occasions, but a few, we would find out 5 days ahead of time that we would need road closures in a certain area of the city, and thus blockades. And if there was a large enough group of people that perhaps we wanted some security at these events, and it was just becoming very hard then to plan properly. So we wanted to put this process in place so that we have all the information we need and we can accommodate these events and gatherings to the best of our ability. And that's what is really driving that press release.
Has there been, I mean, recent confusion about what does and does not require a permit? It just felt like a very specific message to send at a specific time. So just didn't know if there was a recent inciting issue that happened.
Not really. Again, you know, I hearken back, and I'm being honest with this, we're just seeing a plethora of volunteer organizations that are wanting to host community events. And it's great to see. We want to get people more involved. But here again, with our street department, our police department, staffing those departments properly, some of these events happen over the weekend when it's a downtime for a department like our street department. We just didn't want to be in a position where we were letting any specific organization down by us having to scramble over a period of 2 to 3 days to bring in extra staff, to make sure those road closure barriers were where they need to be, to make certain that we schedule an additional police officer to cover a certain block if we're going to have 100, 150 people at that specific event. Many of these events request a fire engine to come down or a police car to come and set at that event so that kids or families can interact with those pieces of equipment. We want to accommodate all this, but we did not have a thorough, organized process to bring these things before the Board of Works, let our team have an internal discussion about what needed to be provided, and then to implement that plan. So it's simply housekeeping, and we'll continue to find things like this in the city, and it's my job when we find a process that's not there that should be there, that we do what's right by the taxpayers and put a process in place to serve them to the best of our ability.
Has it ever been the case that an event has come up that simply couldn't be approved or couldn't go forward because of some of the mitigating issues that you're talking about?
Not at this point in time. I'll say we've come close in a couple of instances, but I would hate to have that happen because many of these organizations, they spend a lot of time behind closed doors. They have volunteers. They're counting on the city for certain things. And I don't want to be that mayor to let somebody down or let a specific organization down if they're doing something for the good of their neighborhood. So not to this point in time, but it could happen in the future, and we simply don't want that. So we encourage people, and I'm so glad you brought this up today, get on the City of Frankfort's Facebook page or our City of Frankfort website, frankfort-in.gov. They can pull this up. They can look at it. Make sure you get it filled out. If you have any questions, you can contact my office and or the police department who is helping process these requests, and we'll make sure that you get the information you need so you can have a successful and safe event here in the city.
So I'm going to ask one more quick question about this. Just looking again back at that long list of events, which tracks with other examples of permits that I've seen, listing all of the variations of things that might require a permit. And it does talk about festivals and parades, et cetera, but it also talks about, for example, rallies. I know that sometimes maybe groups with a political or social agenda might want to hold an event in Frankfort. Has that happened? Has that kind of event needed to go through an approval process in your time as mayor?
No, it hasn't, Emily. And I think, you know, a good way for people to think about this is if you're holding any type of event, whether it's a Right to Life rally or a political rally or just a festival for a neighborhood, if you're going to need to use street infrastructure, if you're going to be impeding traffic, if you're going to have a big enough group of people that it could be a safety issue with traffic, probably need to reach out to us. If you have a need for utilities, say if you need an electric outlet to run a sound system or you need access to water, you know, all of these reasons, if your event impacts one of these pieces of infrastructure that I've alluded to or a safety concern, it's a good idea to fill that out. And if people, you know, when in doubt, call us and ask us. If it's something that you're holding obviously in your backyard and it might bleed over into the side yard and is not going to get into the street, you don't need to go through this process. But when in doubt, give us a call. We'll talk about it, and together we'll decide whether it's proper or not for you to fill out that permit application.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking to Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. And remember, you can call in questions for the mayor by dialing 765-496-1999, emailing ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org, or tweeting a question if you're on Twitter, at WBAA News. We're going to keep talking about special events here. You've got the first Hispanic Heritage Festival in Frankfurt taking place at the beginning of October. So what was the impetus for that event, since you've never held something like this before?
You know, the Hispanic culture in our community is so rich. And I, as mayor, I want to embrace that. I think diversity and cultures coming together and learning from one another, I think that's one of the best things a community can do. And up to this point in time, you know, we can do a much better job of celebrating the rich history that this diversity brings to the community and all the wonderful things that it can contribute to this community and to really educate people. And so we wanted one of the first events to be held at Prairie Creek Park, which will open in October, to be our Hispanic Heritage Festival. And it's given us the opportunity to reach out to leaders of this subsect of the community, get them involved, make them a part of this process, and it's going to really be a fantastic day. I encourage people to come out, eat some great food, hear some good music, meet some new people. These are our neighbors. We've got to get to know one another. And what I have found is certain demographics of the community, you know, fly below the radar. And we don't want that. We want to celebrate everyone. Everyone needs to come to the surface and be involved in the community. I was proud that Isaac Chavez, an individual that served in the Frankfurt Future Leaders Advisory Council and was an intern from my office, was one of the first Hispanic individuals in this community to run for elected office this year. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but Isaac's going to be back in the future, and I expect there to be more just like him. So I encourage everyone to come out. It's going to be a great day at Prairie Creek Park.
And you were mentioning, how have you, in the process of putting all of this together, how have you specifically engaged with members of the Latino community? What kind of input have they had into what's happening that day and why?
Well, our development director, Annie Bacon, has really spearheaded this effort, and she has a committee that's working on this, and essentially all but two or three people on the committee are of Latino background and Latino heritage. So, you know, their voices are driving this entire process, from what kind of bands we have to the various vendors that we'll have to the food options to the musical options, the entertainment. And so really it is the Latino voice that's driving this. Without them, it wouldn't be what it is. We are getting several small businesses involved in this as well. Several sponsors are going to step up. We're continuing to seek sponsorships for the Hispanic Heritage Festival. And their voice is going to turn out a great day here in our city, a day of diversity and celebration.
I did also see, I believe today was the last day that I saw noted for vendors to sign up for booth space at the festival. I don't know how many, if you know how many people off the top of your head have signed up for those spaces.
I don't, Emily. I'd have to get an update from Annie Bacon on that, but you bring up a great point. Today is a cutoff day, so if people want to get involved, reach out to us. If you're a day late, dare I say this, reach out to us, and if at all possible, we'll get you involved in the Hispanic Heritage Festival.
Okay. And I guess one last question about this would be, what has the overall response from the overall community been to this event happening?
It's been very positive. You know, another thing that we did was we actually entered a float in the Clinton County Fair Parade. So we had a Hispanic Heritage Festival float. I was able to get on that float with the kiddos, you know, great dress, great music. And like I said, this is about bringing everyone to the surface of the community. And the thing I love about being mayor is I stay out of that thread of the national confusion and the high-powered political rhetoric that's going on. If you live in this community, I'm here to serve you. I'm here to help make sure your family's safe, you have good job opportunities, you have good educational opportunities. And this is about a certain subsect of our community that has flown below the radar that we're saying, no, they don't need to. We celebrate you, we love the diversity, and we want everyone to get to know their neighbor here in the city of Frankfurt. And we all have something to offer to this community, no matter what our skin color is or where we hail from or the language we speak or how we sound when we speak, you have a part to play in this community. And we're going to celebrate that in Prairie Creek Park on this day.
Okay. At this week's city council meeting, the first reading of an amended alcohol ordinance passed that would allow alcohol in Prairie Creek Park and the Neighborhood Center in specific instances. I saw that you had mentioned the alcohol would have to for example, be kept in certain sections of these venues. Can you just talk about what this would look like?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing to state is, and you've already said it, but I'm going to reemphasize it, this amended ordinance does not allow any alcohol beverages in any of our parks outside of Prairie Creek Park and the Neighborhood Center. So from TPA Park to Green Street Park to 3rd Street Park, Circle, and down the list, no alcoholic beverages will be allowed in those parks. And one of the biggest reasons I was against allowing events to serve alcohol in those parks was the fact that we really didn't have a good way of segregating off where that alcohol was going to be served and consumed. For example, an individual drinking a beer at the large shelter house for a family reunion at TPA Park very well could have walked over to the playground set, which is directly adjacent to the large shelter house. And we don't want alcohol being around our children. In Prairie Creek Park and the Neighborhood Center, we have areas that that alcohol can be quarantined off, so to speak, from the rest of the viewing public. So if you don't want to be around that, if you don't believe in that, you or your children don't have to be around it. And the applications are very thorough if you've taken a look at them. Obviously, there has to be a licensed individual to serve that alcohol. There are security measures in place that state you have to hire an off-duty police officer to be at those events, and things have to be done responsibly. This is passed on first reading. It has two more readings to go, so it might pass, it might fail, but this does give us the opportunity, Emily, I think, to attract more revenue to the Neighborhood Center in Prairie Creek Park. For example, if a bride was having a wedding and they wanted to have a toast, or there was a small acoustic concert going on at Prairie Creek Park and someone wanted to serve a micro-brewed beer through a regulated and licensed alcoholic beverage seller, they could do that. And so I think it's going to allow us to attract more parties and events and drive some more revenue to these particular spaces in our city.
So we're talking about attracting revenue, and then the flip side of that coin, which you've also sort of just spoken to, but that I saw that City Council Member Lewis Wheeler cast the only no vote this week and then said that this ordinance is inconsistent with the family values we're trying to have in this city and that it was a mistake. How do you reconcile all of that?
Well, I guess my parents are bad people then, because in no way are my parents alcoholics, but growing up, you know, my dad might have a beer at a family event. And so if Councilman Wheeler is going to make those statements, I guess my parents are bad people. And there's a lot of parents out there that are bad people. I think everything has to be done in moderation and very responsibly. You know, we don't want people getting drunk or inebriated around our children. We want to be very responsible about this. But here again, if a bride and a groom are wanting to have a wedding reception at Prairie Creek Park or the Neighborhood Center and they'd like to have a champagne toast at the end of the night or serve wine to their guests, right now, legally, we can't do that. So I believe it's something that we can do. We're going to continue to moderate it. We put several different traps in place to make sure it's done properly. And if we find a mistake's happened and there's an unintended consequence, we'll approach it at that time. I respect everyone has differing views on this, but I think it can be done responsibly, and I think we can do it well.
And so another question would be, you know, is this a sign of things to come? You know, will regulations kind of be relaxed or loosened in the other parks if you identify venues where drinking could be sanctioned outside of Prairie Creek Park?
I can say I wouldn't support it, Emily.
Okay.
I wouldn't support any alcohol going in any other city park or structure other than Prairie Creek Park in the Beer Garden area or the Neighborhood Center.
Okay. Are you, since we're talking about Prairie Creek Park, I'm wondering, because it is opening, you know, how much are you anticipating some things popping up that you're just going to have to deal with kind of as they come? You know, what are things that you're thinking about as mayor? Because this has kind of been a long time coming.
Yes.
And so now we're here. Do you have, you know, there are obviously many positives to this. What are things you might be a little concerned about, or you're just not sure, you know, what might happen?
Well, we're trying to plan this out as thoroughly as possible. And our park superintendent, Travis Sheets, and our community development director, Annie Bacon, they're really doing a good job, because here's the thing. We can build this park, but if we don't program it properly and we don't have great events there, then it will all be for naught. So although the park is being built right now, I'm thinking about once we cut the ribbon on this, how do we program great community and family events happening every weekend and throughout the week, especially in the warmer summer months and the crisp fall season of Indiana, to attract people to come to Frankfort? Because the reason we're doing this is to try to get more people to come here, to create a quality of place that makes people want to live here, so we have more Yamato Japanese steakhouse situations, and we have more home developers looking at Frankfort and saying, that's a progressive community, a community that's investing in itself, that's trying to create a safe, equitable place for everyone to call home. Let's go plant some dollars in Frankfort. And so that's one thing that's on my mind. Some technical things that are on my mind are things like parking, for example. And we've talked about this issue on the show before. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope we get to a point that our downtown square is packed and we have a true parking problem. It would be a good thing, but at the same time, we're going to have to plan for that. And so I'm talking to city councilmen right now about looking at different areas we can put a parking structure in. We have purchased a used pedestrian trolley, something that you'd see at Disney World, for example, that we can hook up to the back of a pickup truck. And if we have to have a parking area, say, out in a large parking space by our high school, we can run a continuous trolley to motor people to the downtown and then back to their car at night. So we're thinking about these things. And then you said it well, there's going to be things that come up that we have to deal with, and we'll do that. We have the team and the staff for this. But it's really an exciting time in our city. Another thing we're planning is a new $10 million aquatic center that's going to open in 2021, right along with Prairie Creek Park opening this year. So a lot of amenity items, Emily, that I can't stress enough. This is economic development, attracting more people here so that we can fill the jobs that we have currently open and attract more industries and small businesses to this community. Until we do that and do it right, we won't be the next city for big plan expansions, and we're trying to be modern and progressive in our approach to this, and I think we have been.
So we've been following the developments in the wake of a fire at the recycling facility in Frankfort a few weeks ago. So just to check in on that, how is the quadrant pickup system working right now?
It's going well. You know, thoughts and prayers to the Warner family. I feel terrible for them. They've built this business over 28 years, and they're just good people. They are very good people. So what we did was, Emily, immediately afterwards, and our firefighters did an awesome job on this, as they always do, we sat down with Troy Warner, and we came out with a system that we are picking up one quadrant per week every Wednesday in regards to recycling. Folks can get on our city website, Facebook page, to check out when their quadrant will be picked up. We are working still with Warner Recycling. They are having employees actually come out to our recycling facility to help sort so that we can still do the single-streamed recycling. Warner is paying for all that. That's no extra cost at the city. It's keeping his people employed. But we didn't want to turn our back on this family. When someone's down, we're a community that wraps our arms around them. So we wanted to continue that partnership. And from what I've heard, Mr. Warner has every intention on rebuilding and coming back stronger than ever. And I will say this, if you do have some corrugated cardboard, I know I do right now, that's stacking up in your garage, you can always put that in the back of your vehicle Monday through Friday, 8 to 4 p.m., and take it out to the street department, and we'd be happy to take that off your hands if you do not want to wait for your quadrant to be picked up. But we appreciate everyone's patience. Again, this is a community coming together, trying to help a family that's down on their luck right now.
Have more people, has there been an uptick in people dropping off those recyclable materials at the street department? Have people been making that effort?
Yes, ma'am, they have. And I talked to our street superintendent yesterday, and in all honesty, we haven't seen any downtick in terms of the amount of recycling that we're bringing in, which is a good sign. I was kind of fearful that we'd see more recycling going out to our landfill, people setting it out on trash days, but we've really made recycling a priority in the city for our environment, especially since all of our trash does go out to what I refer to as Mount Clinton, just north of Frankfort, our county landfill. I don't want to see that thing grow any more than it has to. It's a shame it ever came to Clinton County to begin with, to be quite frank with you. So people are still recycling, and we are seeing an uptick in people actually bringing their recycled goods to our street department off of Burlington Avenue.
And it was also reported the recycling facility had recently passed inspection by the fire department before the fire. So what types of issues are the fire department looking for in an inspection?
Well, obviously anything that can be incendiary, you know, we're looking for things that could throw off sparks. Obviously one of the big issues is electrical wiring not being properly installed, or recent electrical work that isn't inspected properly. So these are all things that our fire inspector is looking for. And then there's also safety issues. Where are your exits? What is your emergency action plan should your alarm system go off signifying smoke or a fire? Kevin Catron, our fire inspector, is incredibly thorough. I know that state investigators, insurance investigators, and our local investigators are still looking into this matter. And as soon as we come up with something in regards to this recent incident at Werner, that will be made public through our fire department so the public has an understanding of what went on to the best of our ability.
And you've had a few not insignificant fires this year in Frankfort. So would you say, you know, has the city and the fire department learned something from these fires and carried that forward to the next one? What has the takeaway been to improve the process?
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, it's been a good call that we've increased our manpower in the city. And I will say we just got our ISO ratings back, which directly impact people's homeowners insurance. We do cover several areas outside of our city. And I can tell you individuals that we cover within a 5-mile radius of the city of Frankfort, their ISO rating went from a 9 to a 4, which is going to bring down their homeowners insurance, which tells me we're doing things right. Our hose testing, replacing equipment, improving our training protocol, hiring more firefighters, it directly impacts people's wallets. But I think it's also caused a lot of people who own older homes, older buildings, to really take note, go back over things with a fine-tooth comb to make sure they're doing everything they can as a private citizen to protect their assets. But as you said, we've had some big fires this year. It's been very unlucky and very unfortunate that it's happened. I'm just thankful for the most part that no one has been hurt. We have had one fire where an individual tragically passed away. It was a residential fire. So we have had some individuals hurt, but on a large scale in these fires, people have been safe.
Okay, and would you, in the 30 seconds that we have left, would you say that there's a way that you specifically can, you know, mitigate some of these issues as mayor, not specifically being a part of the fire department, I understand?
Sure. No, I think the biggest thing is making sure our fire inspector and our fire department are carrying out their walkthroughs of all these commercial buildings in our downtown and throughout our city, doing proper logging of all this, and then reacting accordingly in regards to holding building owners accountable so we make sure anyone in there is safe. And then I, as mayor, budgeting properly to put public safety at the top, whether it be fire or police, making sure they get the funding they need for training, equipment, and putting the proper protocol in place should a fire happen, that we're able to put that out. And I believe we're doing that, Emily.
Okay, that's our time for today. Mayor McBarnes, thanks so much for being with us. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, and Crawfordsville. Thanks so much for listening to Ask the Mayor, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.